Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. Today we're on lesson 195. And in the last lesson, we were in Genesis 41 and verse 16. At this point, Joseph is appearing before Pharaoh, and Pharaoh believes that this Joseph, this Hebrew, has the ability to interpret dreams. And Joseph makes it very plain. As was mentioned, all servants of God, whenever somebody gives them the credit, they immediately make sure that people realize that it is God and the only one that should be worshipped and accredited for all great things, and it's not men. We see an example of that with John in the book of Revelation, when he heard a lot of the prophecies from Gabriel that was explained to him many things. He bowed, you know, he was so overwhelmed, he bowed down and he worshipped. And why would he do it? We don't know. He should have known better. And yet the angel immediately reminded him to stand up. He says, I'm just like one of you, you know, one of the servants of God. He said, you bow down, you know, or you worship only before God. And oftentimes that's what happens, unfortunately, with people that give themselves the credit not to God. And, you know, sometimes God intervenes. We have a case of King Herod. You read in the book of Acts, the one that killed James. It's not the original Herod, but his son. And he stood and gave an oration before the people of Tyre, and all people were very impressed by that. They said, well, this is the voice of a God, not of a man. And immediately we read that the angel of the Lord had struck him with worms, and he died. Why? He didn't give God the credit and the glory. And, you know, now and then God wants to make a point, and he makes it. And so we should always remember that. Never take the credit to ourselves. Never exalt ourselves. Never get to the point where we think, you know, it's only God and me. Because that's the height of heart of any man, to get to that point. And in verse 16, Joseph makes it very plain. I'm not the source. It's not in me, he says. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. And of course, he does not need to explain who that God is. Joseph is a Hebrew, and the Hebrews worshipped the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and those things were known by the people around. And to begin with, all people of the earth at the time knew that there is the Elohim above all, and so it was not too unusual. And as it is, earlier we read that God came to Pharaoh in the days of Abraham and spoke to him, and he came to Abimelech and he spoke to him, and these people, you know, did not have a problem understanding who that person is. Obviously, this was not the idols that they worshipped, you know, God of fire and goddess and God of valleys or God of fertility. This is the God of gods, Elohim, the real one, above all. And so this is what Joseph tells him. It's not in me, but God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. And verse 17, and Pharaoh spoke unto Joseph, in my dream, behold, I stood upon the brink of the river, and behold, there came up out of the river seven kine, fat-fleshed and well-favored, and they fed in the reed grass. And so he's repeating to him the dream. In contrast to Nebuchadnezzar, he wanted to see whether those astrologers and magicians really know what they're talking about. And so he was not willing to give them the dream. He said, it was gone from me. In this case, there was no such an issue. And you see the respect that he already had for Joseph. And obviously, those magicians were not the servants of God, and the king knew about it. But when it came to Daniel, that was not an issue. And so in verse 19, we continue. Pharaoh says about his dream, and behold, seven other kine came up after them, poor and very ill-favored and lean-fleshed, such as I never saw in all the land of Egypt for badness. In other words, it was so skinny, and sort of, you know, the people that came out of the concentration camps, that's how those cows looked. And when cows look like that, they just die. Well, here it is, you see them walking. And obviously, God is revealing to him something through this symbolic cows. And the lean and ill-favored kine did eat up the first seven fat kine, you know, which is most unusual. And when they had eaten them up, it could not be known that they had eaten them, but they were still ill-favored as at the beginning, and so I awoke. So that tells you again about the way God illuminates minds to understand what he's going to do. You know, in the choosing of this example, and you can see, you know, think about it, you know, vividly in your mind. Those cows, skinny cows, they eat, you know, the fat cows, and they're still skinny. It tells you a lot about the mind of God. In other words, when you study his word, when you study the law of God, he reveals so much of himself there. His thinking, his way of thinking. And the more we do that, the more we develop his mind without even realizing it, and becomes natural to us to think like God. That's how we grow in grace and knowledge and understanding of God and Jesus Christ, and develop his nature and our gods in the making, or Elohim in the making. Just like children, you know, notice their parents do this and do that, and they follow them without even realizing it, and mimic them and imitate them and begin to think like them and have their emotions and their feelings, and pretty soon they grow up and they are just a spit image of their parents. And so it is that God wants us to be. That's the reason why he gives us his word, and in detail in many cases, not just to show you what is happening, what he's going to do, but also to tell you about himself. You see? So when we study these kind of things, we should analyze all these matters and go beyond just the facade of reading a story, as the manner of many is, unfortunately. And so Pharaoh says, I awoke, verse 22, and I saw in my dream, in other words, it was one dream that he went back to sleep, and that's the way God made it to be. He wanted to make a separation between the two, and yet at the same time linking the two, to impress it upon him, so he wouldn't think, well, it's just a dream, it just happened, you know. Because when you have a dream, you don't go back to sleep and dream again the same thing, you know, or something similar to that, in a different way. That's the reason why he knew that. In verse 22 he says, and I saw in my dream, and behold, seven ears came up upon one stalk, full and good. And behold, seven ears, withered, thin, just like the cows, and blasted with the east wind, you know, the hot wind, sprung up after them, and the thin ears swallowed up the seven good ears. So all these things are totally unnatural, you see. And Pharaoh began to realize there is something here of a divine. And so Joseph, who is a Hebrew, worshipping the God of the Hebrews, and comes and tells him these things, you know, he fully comprehends that this is of a divine nature. And just not like, you know, the stories that you hear from, or legends, or whatever faith they had, you know, and then the false gods that they worshipped, which obviously they didn't think they were false. And so he says, the king, after this second dream, when he woke up, obviously, and I told it unto the magicians, but there was none that could declare it to me. Now, they are the magicians who are supposed to know these kind of things. They did not have the capacity, because this was not something that came from man, but came from God, and only a person who knows the mind of God and through whom God speaks, obviously, is going to be able to tell the king, or the Pharaoh. And Joseph said unto Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is one. In other words, both of them, they mean the same thing. And what God is about to do, he has declared unto Pharaoh. You see? So Pharaoh now is, in a sense, sort of a prophet. You know, he sees visions, he sees dreams. And God, through this, in coming directly to him, see, he didn't come to Joseph, he came directly to the king, as he came directly to the king Nebuchadnezzar. And that, again, shows you about the manner in which God deals, not only with his own people, but with other peoples, other kings, other rulers. He directly involves himself with them when it is according to his plan, just like he directly spoke to the Pharaoh before that in the days of Abraham, and to Abimelech, and he was carrying conversation with Balaam. And these are not the only examples, obviously. God had done it with many, many on the face of the earth in the past 6,000 years. And that aspect of God, sometimes, you know, we don't realize that exists. We're just seeing he speaks only to his prophets, the prophets of Israel. Peter made it very plain that he understood it at that point when the Holy Spirit fell on Cornelius in his house. He said, at this point I perceive it. In other words, I did not realize it. That's the way it works. He said, I perceive that God is not a respecter of persons, you know, speaking specific about his own nation, his own people. but in every nation. In every nation, you see? In every nation, where he finds someone that fears him and does the things which are pleasing in his sight, you know, obeys his commandments to the degree and the sense, obviously. You know, he said he has respect for them. And so sometimes you forget that God is the God of the whole earth, and the whole earth is going to be, generally speaking, you know, some exceptions, are going to be his children in his kingdom, living for eternity, spirit beings, divine beings. So obviously, if he cares about birds and about little things, how much more about his children? And we have to remember that. That all the people all around us in all generations are all children of God. They're all God beings in the making. Only they haven't started the spiritual process yet. But many of the lessons that God teaches them are in that direction. Just like with the children of Israel. And so this is what he says here. I told the magicians, none of them could declare it to me. And Joseph said unto Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is one. What God is about to do, he has declared unto Pharaoh. The seven good kine are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dream is one. And the seven lean and ill-favored kine that came up after them are 7 years, and also the seven empty ears, blasted with the wind, the east wind, there shall be 7 years of famine. And that is the thing which I spoke unto Pharaoh. And obviously using the cow, and then the, you know, that's the animal, because people ate them, and then the crops, you know, the wheat, that basically gives you the, generally speaking, the totality of the food chain. In other words, meat and the, whatever the earth grows. And so God used these examples in dealing with Pharaoh. That makes it very simple, very plain to understand, you know, the simplicity in Christ. It doesn't have to be complex. And so Joseph makes it very plain to him that since. So he says there, verse 28, that is one thing which I spoke unto Pharaoh. What God is about to do, he has shown unto Pharaoh. So he makes it twice clear that God is speaking to him, you know, directly to him, and he's sending his servant to interpret that and to make it understandable to him. But originally, God came directly, obviously, to Pharaoh and put those dreams in his mind, and he intended fully to make it clear and understandable to him. And as he said, you know, those things are for peace. You see, as we read in verse 16, where he says, God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. So it was not of horrible things to come, bad things to come, but good things to come. Yes, you're going to have the good and the bad in our news, in terms of the good years and the bad years, but God intends to bring something good out of it. So, you know, we see a Pharaoh here that is a decent human being, you know, he's a Gentile, he's an idol worshiper, and like many on the face of the earth, and yet God has compassion and mercy on those people who don't know more than they do. Just like he told Jonah, you know, with Nineveh. You know, these are people that, you know, they don't know that there are so many of them, and beside of that, there are many cattle also, and they don't know their right from their left, which means, you know, I am compassionate and merciful to all my creation, not just to you, Jonah, or your people. And so in verse 29, we read, behold, there come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt, and there shall arise after them 7 years of famine. And all the plenty shall be forgotten in the land of Egypt. And the famine shall consume the land. So as good as the 7 years would be, so would the 7 years of famine would be just in the other extreme. Horrible years that would totally devastate a land. And that's one of the ways in which God speaks to his children on this earth. All around the earth, not just his own people. You see, as you can see this example in Egypt. But he does that in every land on the face of the earth. Now, nowadays, instead of the children of Israel, of course, a lot of them don't even know who they are, letting nations know, look, you've got a famine, you have to cry to God, your ways are not pleasing the sight of God, you know, turn to him. Well, they try to make up for it to sort of annul the punishment that God brings on nations, and they take their own wheat and their own harvest and their own good things that God gave them, and they give it away to other nations. And I think that's humane. You know, and from a human point of view, it sounds like it is, you know, people are hungry, you've got to give them food. Instead of asking, now, wait a minute, what is God doing here? You see, what is the reason for that? Show them the way. You see? So God will bring an end. He who brought the famine should be the one to bring an end to it, based on the behavior of the people. And that's how far the children of Israel went away from God. And Joseph made it very plain. And I'm sure that it was not just a matter of telling Pharaoh about the dream, but also showing Pharaoh that there is a God in heaven and he wants to be worshipped, and you should recognize him for what he is, and to what degree, you know, he taught him about the ways of God, we don't know. But obviously, you can imagine that this king and his people would be, you know, interested in knowing the ways of God, at least the ways that God wants them to know, to be more decent people. You know, this famine is not for nothing. And it came not only on Egypt, but on the whole area around, including the land of Canaan. So God was teaching all of them a lesson that He is God, and it's not all the gods and idols that they worshipped. At this point, they were still more decent, like both the Canaanites and the Egyptians. It's later on that God totally afflicted them. And as for the land of Canaan, He totally, at least He asked them, the children of Israel, to totally destroy them. Leave none that is alive. And these are days still where there is more decency. As God told Abraham, you know, you're not going to have this until the fourth generation when the sins of the Amorites are full. And, you know, nowadays we're coming to the same age also. When the day comes when God feels that the sins of the people on this earth is full, they went too far, that's when He's going to pour the punishments on humanity, including the people of Israel. And so that's what he says to Joseph, to tell Pharaoh. In other words, he put it in his mind also. He said, Joseph is not inventing it. He's not speaking his own words. He's not a false prophet. He's a true prophet. And so he says to the king, and the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of the famine which follows, for it shall be very grievous. Verse 32, and for that the dream was doubled, you know, to emphasize, to impress it upon the mind of Pharaoh. And oftentimes you see in the Bible there are many statements that are said twice for emphasis, you see. And you find it pretty common throughout the entirety of the Hebrew Scriptures. And so in verse 32, he says the dream, you know, was doubled unto Pharaoh twice. It is because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. So God is the one that causes the Pharaoh to dream twice about the same thing in two different ways. And then he shows him in essence, and we learn from that too, that God, in his kindness and mercy to us, realizing that, you know, the first time we see or hear something like that, we may not comprehend what's happening. So he uses this pattern of saying something twice. And it's not that he's redundant, but it is for emphasis' sake. And that's the purpose of it. And sometimes you even see cases where it is repeated three times, the same thing. And verse 32 at the end, it says, and God will shortly bring it to pass. And then verse 33, now therefore let the Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Now obviously when Joseph says that, he doesn't say that with an arrogant attitude, meaning himself, you see. He still doesn't know what his future would be with the king. And so he assumes, you know, there should be somebody in Egypt that is wise enough to handle these matters. And yet God had something else in mind. And so he says, you look for a man like that and set him over the land of Egypt. That's already the highest office that you can have under the Pharaoh. And let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint overseers over the land, and take up the fifth part of the land of Egypt in the 7 years of plenty, and let them gather all the food of these good years that come, and lay up corn under the hand of the Pharaoh for food in the cities, and let them keep it, and the food shall be for a store to the land against the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land perish not through the famine. So in essence, this is what God is saying. Joseph is just repeating the words of God. God knows that for them to survive the famine, the horrible famine to come, they will need to put aside 20% of what they have during their fat years. So that, again, tells you about the mind of God and how it works and what He tells us. You know, that gives us wisdom that it's good for us also in our lifetime for the bad years to come, be it retirement years or whatever it may be, as much as possible to put aside, you know, for the rainy days, so to speak. And here he gave them the 20% because he knew this is what it would require to help them make it through the 7 years in a comfortable manner. But even then, as we read the story, they basically lost everything, the land, the property, and everything else, but they remained alive. And so, in verse 37, we read, "And the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all of his servants." All of them. One heart. You see, God again is giving Joseph, that is, a favor in the sight not only of Pharaoh, but all the servants. So there isn't going to be any competition or jealousy or envy. And that's very important. Oftentimes somebody may have favor with the head of state, you know, with a leader, whatever it may be, but there are all those underlings, so to speak, who are full of jealousy and envy, and they make his life miserable after that. And that happens pretty often. And so God makes sure, across the board, there is respect and honor there on the part of all. You remember what happened in the case of Daniel, when the king loved him very much, respected him highly, gave him high office, but there were some among the servants that didn't like this idea. They were envious, they were jealous, and they were trying to get Daniel into trouble. You see, first they tried to get the three friends of Daniel into trouble, and then they were, in the days of Darius, the Persian, they were trying to get Daniel himself into trouble to get rid of him. Well, here there was a complete, across-the-board favor that God gave Joseph. And as it is, even in the case of Daniel and the friends, God took care of them anyway, of the enemies, because they served him with their whole being and heart, obviously. So in verse 38, we read, "And Pharaoh said unto his servants, Can we find such a one as this?" As this man. See, they're all totally impressed. And God puts it in their heart and mind to realize, here is a prophet of God, and he speaks the words of God, and these things came from God. And there's nobody really more qualified than this person. And all of them agree. And it's not just the Pharaoh. And so he says, can we find, all of us, not me. Not can I find, but can we, all of us. Can we find such a one as this? A man in whom the spirit of Elohim is. You see the recognition of the part of Pharaoh. Not an Israelite. About God and about the spirit of God. That is in a person. And obviously, you can see here that the Pharaoh understands the Spirit of God is something that is in a person in terms of giving wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. It is not a person itself. So this concept of the three in one, that's obviously not present in this teaching, in this statement here. And so, verse 39 we read, "And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, Forasmuch as God has shown you all this," now he's recognizing and giving the credit and the honor to God, Elohim, the Elohim of the Hebrews, to the Elohim that is above all. And he says, God has shown you all this. There is none so discreet and wise as you. You see, it's not you personally. It's because God is the one behind it. We certainly want a man like you to handle these matters, because we know that God is with you. You see, that's the difference. So the credit doesn't go to men. It's not to Joseph that he gives the credit. It's ultimately to the God of heavens, and that's exactly what God wanted Nebuchadnezzar to come to the point where he realizes there is a God in heaven, you see? And he is the one that is judging in the kingdoms of men, and he gives it to whomsoever he wills. And that's what the people of God should always, in whatever we do, make sure that the people know that all these good things, whatever it may be, all the great works, they come because of God and not because of us. So the credit never goes to us. And should, you know, basically be on the sidelight. Step out of the way, out of the limelight, so to speak, and let God have all the credit and the glory and the honor of God and in Jesus Christ. And Pharaoh, so he say, you know, Pharaoh recognizes that. And so he says to him in verse 40, "You shall be over my house." Now you're the chief of staff. "And according unto your word shall all my people be ruled." In other words, you're going to be the ruler of Egypt. Under me, obviously. But look how high he elevated him. He can't be higher than that. And that office never existed before that. And Nebuchadnezzar had done also the same in appointing Daniel over everything. And so he says, "Only in the throne will I be greater than you." You see? And in verse 41, "And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." And actually it was over all the empire, including the land of Canaan, you know, the part of Canaan that Egypt controlled at the time. As I said, and other lands, obviously, that they conquered. So Joseph was over all that territory, over the empire of Egypt, the greatest empire in the south. "And Pharaoh took off his signet ring from his hand and put it upon Joseph's hand and arrayed him in vestures of fine linen and put a gold chain about his neck." And you read basically the same description with Daniel. And you also read the same description with Mordecai. In the book of Esther, a man that served God, worshipped God, trusted in God, looked to God, and gave all the credits to God. And you see how God elevated him from a nobody to the highest position in the empire, to be over all the empire. So you have three examples there how God did it. And it's very interesting also to know one of these days, as history is going to be written, of all the men of God throughout the past thousands of years that God elevated in many lands to such positions or similar positions, to see how God was involved in the lives of his people, of his servants. And so, verse 33, "And he made him ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried before him, Avrech." Avrech, that's in Hebrew, which means, of course in English you don't see that, but Avrech means an exalted one. And as a matter of fact, this word is still being used today in the Hebrew community, in the Jewish community, especially in the religious community, and not as much as it used to be, but basically a title that was given to a high, exalted, and mighty one in the law of God, in the scriptures. Was not given to a secular person. And so, they call him Avrech, and he set him over all the land of Egypt. So here it is, from rags to riches, from poverty, from persecution, from being sold, you see, into slavery, by the will of God. And of course we don't see things like that, and we think, you know, woe is me, look what's happening to me, I serve God, you know. That's now, you find a lot of people like that, even in our midst. They think, well, we're the people of God, you know, I'm the servant of God, I serve Him, I try to do my best, and all these evil things come upon me, and gradually, without even realizing, they're allowing the devil to enter in, and they begin to point the finger first in a subtle way, and then after that, some of them go all the way to the extreme of becoming bitter against God. You see, they don't see the whole story, and in the middle of the story, you know, they pass judgment on God instead of waiting until the end. You know, wait on the Lord, it says, and you wait until He does His will. And Joseph began to learn that very well, that when God exalted him and giving him the dreams, you know, just like He's now giving Pharaoh, and when He gave him the dreams, when he was still a lad, he allowed that to go into his head, and he began to sort of boast about it, that even his own father was very angry with him and rebuked him for it, and he was sort of enjoying it, you know, the fact that he's above his own brothers, and he would go and tell them that. And he reaped a lot of misery and sufferings for that, and maybe quite a bit of that would have been totally unnecessary had he humbled himself before God and let God exalt him. And the spirit of humility and meekness, you know, bring it to the attention of his father and maybe his brothers, and, you know, things would have been different. But that's the way God teaches us lessons when we need to learn lessons. And yet, if we humble ourselves before Him and totally submit to Him and worship Him and turn away from our own self-exaltation, then He's going to raise us up to the top. And we see that in many cases. You know, when we go to the book of Psalms in Psalm 105, God is mentioning something here. And as we mentioned earlier, you know, Joseph was brought into Egypt as a slave, crying probably all the way, sad and afflicted and oppressed, depressed, in a horrible state and feelings. And then he has good news, because he is bought by a very good man who puts him in a good position, and God blesses him abundantly, so he's greatly encouraged, and he rises to the top. And then something comes upon him, though he was faithful with God and obedient, and evil came upon him. You know, some people may say, you know, what's wrong with God? and serving him, look at the bad things that come my way. And we hear these kind of things from people, unfortunately. And so then the man that does him harm and wrong, though he did him nothing but good, you know, Potiphar, puts him in prison. And prison in the beginning was not a good place to be. It was not a pleasant experience. It's not that immediately, you know, he rose to the top in the prison. He still went through a period of affliction and suffering. And yet God was with him all those, you know, days and times and moments and pain and suffering and affliction, going through the whole process with him, so to speak, never leaving him alone. You know, and though he went, as David would say, in the shadow or the valley of death, God was with him. And gradually Joseph began to recognize that and totally submitted himself to the punishment, to the affliction, to the bad things that came his way, and rejoiced in the good and gave God the glory. And as we mentioned earlier, the Potiphar, obviously, for the evil that he had done to Joseph, and God is a God of justice and judgment, and he says, vengeance is mine, and God obviously made it sure that this person and the woman, you know, the one that did it, would get their, you know, the just desert, so to speak. He would have an inclination for it, an allusion to it in Psalm 105. God is speaking about his own people, including Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he protected them throughout their stay in the land. You can read in all the beginning of the Psalm. And then verse 15, where he says, do not touch my anointed ones and do my prophets no harm. He's speaking about the fathers, including Joseph. And verse 16, moreover, he called for a famine in the land. He's the one responsible for it. And he destroyed all the provision of bread. And as we're just reading here, you know, this 7 years of famine, and he's the one behind it. Verse 17, but before that, he sent a man before them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. So he was doing very well, you know, the favorite son of his father, with those beautiful dreams, high and exalted, and the coat of many colors, you know, way at the top, and he ends up as a slave, you know, from riches to rags, and then again to riches, and then again to rags, and then again to the pinnacle of power in Egypt. Totally unexpected future that no man could ever dream of. He could not even conceive of such a thing. But you see how God does those things. And he gives us all these examples, and in detail he records them. And for the people who study the law, you know, and the Psalms is also part of the law, as Jesus Christ himself, you know, doesn't it say, in your law, that means in your Torah, I said you are God, and he's quoting Psalms, and he's not quoting Moses, you see. And some people forgot that. The Torah means the body of teaching. And for people in their confusion to say the law is done away with, they don't even know what they're talking to begin with. Even the New Testament is the teachings. That's why you see that terminology, you know, the doctrine of Christ or the doctrine of the apostle. That's what it means, the Torah of Christ and of the apostles. Body of teaching is from A to Z, from Genesis to Revelation. And so here we read in verse 17, he sent a man before them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. And when he was sold to a slave, this is how his life was in the beginning. They hurt his feet with fetters, and he was laid in irons, and probably when they put him in prison, that was in that condition. And also, maybe that when they took him to the slave market, you know, that's the way he was. But probably this is more applicable to the time when he was in prison. The master was very angry with him, and he told, you know, the captain of the guard that he's angry with him, and this is the way he should be treated. And yet, God put it in the heart of the master of the prison to realize, no, this man is a different person, and he doesn't deserve that. And so gradually, he let him go higher and higher until he put him totally over everything. And that happened to him already once before that with Potiphar, and it's going to happen again with Pharaoh. You see how God was with his men. And so this Potiphar was in essence responsible for this misery and suffering that Joseph went through. Well, you know, they hurt his feet with fetters, and you can imagine that really happened. And he was laid in irons until the time that his word came to pass, you know, the word of God. And then we read, the word of the Lord tested him. You see? What is the word of the Lord? You know, it's not only a word in terms of speaking, but when you understand, as time goes by, and it is revealed,
that the one that became Jesus Christ is the Word of the Lord. And so the Lord is the Most High, the Father, the one that became the Father, and the Word of the Lord will be Jesus Christ. So there is double meaning there. And the Word of the Lord tested him. And he needed to go through that, and all of us need to go through that, and all of us are going to be going through this high and low examples and experiences through life. And in all cases, we should always look up to God, whether it is good or whether it is bad. As Job said after all the calamity came upon him, God gives, God takes. Let the name of God be blessed. You see, I cannot just bless God only when things are good. You see, that's what he told his wife. What kind of a fool are you? You know, we go give God thanks only when things are good, and not when things are bad. And as it is, when things are bad, it's because God is doing something, and so ultimately it is good. And so that's what it says here. The word of the Lord tested him, the king sent and released him, that's Pharaoh, the ruler of the people let him go free. And he made him lord of his house and ruler of all his possessions. And one other thing that he did here, which we don't read earlier in the account in Genesis, one of the things that he did was not only gather all the food, but he gave him absolute authority over his own peoples. And so he said, we read here in verse 21, he made him lord over his house and ruler over all his possessions to bind his princes at his pleasure and teach his elders wisdom. You see? And that's what we mentioned earlier. That this Potiphar, down the road, obviously, knowing the nature of God, God is a God of justice, God of mercy too, God of grace, but also people that do evil, especially to his servants, are going to have to pay the penalty for it. And probably one of the first that came under this, you know, the reality, and was bound, and he was a prince of Egypt, and his wife probably. And so if he bound them and put them probably in prison, both of them, for what they've done. And I think it's a very strong indication. This is what happened. Otherwise, you know, this statement wouldn't be there for nothing. And so, you know, again, reveals to you the nature of God. He takes care of his servants. He takes care of the enemies of his servants. And we do not need to take vengeance. As God says, vengeance is mine. I will repay. And as horrible as Joseph felt, you know, being hurt with fetters and with irons in the prison against Potiphar and against his wife, to whom he had done no wrong, but only good. You see, he had to allow God to take care of them, and he did not have to have any personal hatred or animosity toward them. And God would have taken care of them. You know, that's again another lesson for all of us. And Joseph obviously learned all these things, and you can see his benevolence and love and affection and a spirit of forgiveness that he demonstrated later on toward his brothers who were responsible, as he understood, by the will of God for selling him and for him going through all these miserable conditions and experiences that he went through in Egypt. And obviously, all the good things that also that came from God. And as we go through these kind of experiences, God, on a personal basis, is teaching us. And that's how we wrestle. That's how Jacob is, you see. He became Israel by wrestling with God through all these highs and lows in life. And Joseph learned that, and Joseph too, in that sense, earned his name as Israel. You see, a son of Israel and an Israelite, because it's not just a biological reality. You know, you're a son of Israel from the house of Israel. You have to earn it by wrestling with God and overcoming all the trials that God brings upon you. And overcoming also even the good things that God gives to you. And you do it by not exalting yourself, by not becoming haughty and arrogant, by not rejecting God when things are good, as Israel unfortunately had done many times. And in doing so, they were not really Israelites in spirit, though they were in the flesh. But ultimately, God is going to make them go through this process of Jacob and Joseph and Abraham, and they will become true Israelites by wrestling with God. And so these are all lessons for us, and we're learning them. And so you see, when Joseph learned obviously all these things, he went all the way to the top. And so we read here in verse 45, and Pharaoh called Joseph's name,
Tzafnat Paneach. And Tzafnat Paneach, Tzafnat means something that is hidden, and Paneach, something that is revealed. You see? So it's sort of a contradictory name. One is hiding, and one is revealing. And that's the name he gave him. In other words, things that God gave people, they were hidden, and they did not know it until he sends them somebody to interpret those things. And so, just like the statement that God would not do anything upon this earth until he reveals it to his servants, the prophets. So they are in that position of knowing the hidden things, you know, the hidden things that God gave to us, and revealing them to others. And we are, in essence, in that position too. God has given us so much knowledge and understanding, and things that are hidden from the world, but are exposed to us, because God revealed them to us. And then, you know, we should give him the credit, not to ourselves. So, even though Joseph received this name, it really all belonged to God. And so he called him Tzafnat Paneach, and he gave him to wife Osnat, the daughter of Potipherah. And Ra again was as a sun god. So here, this was a priest of On, obviously, a pagan priest. And his daughter became the wife of Joseph. So there again, like with Judah. Judah had Tamar to begin with. He had a Canaanite for a wife, the daughter of Shua. And he had three sons from her. One survived and integrated into the house of Judah. That is Shelah, the third one. And we don't hear much about him scripturally, but obviously he still kept going on. And then he had it, two more sons from Tamar, which also was a Canaanite. And so you don't see pure blood there in the family of Jacob. And yet the DNA comes from the father. So in that sense it remains purified, because they didn't necessarily marry a Canaanite every generation. And so with Joseph, we see an Egyptian there. And how she looked like, it's anybody's guess. Some people were actually Semites. And the Hyksos, you know, the ones that controlled Egypt, actually came from the land of Canaan. They may have been Semites and not Hamitic. So this could be a Semitic woman that was given to Joseph. And so he gave him to him the wife, Osnat, the daughter of Potipherah, priest of On. You know, we read about the first master of Joseph, Potiphar, and this one, Potipherah. Basically the same name. And Joseph went out over the land of Egypt, and Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Yeah, just like Jesus Christ begins his ministry at the age of 30. And the Levites also, the priests that is, they could not begin the official service in the temple itself until they were 30, but in the age of 20 they began the work, the training in the temple. But it's only at 30 that they were consecrated to fulfill the religious ceremonies of the sacrifices and things like that. And so Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt, and in the 7 years of plenty the earth brought forth in heaps with abundance, and he gathered up all the food of the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt, and laid up the food in the cities, the food of the field which was round about every city. And so the cities were located in a certain area, and all around it, just like in the old days, as it was in every land on the face of the earth, until, you know, the farmers were disinherited from their land, and now you see the cities, but no lands around it. Just empty lands, no farmers. Many places anyway. And so he went to every city and laid up in the same, in every city, you know, all the crops that came from all around it. Verse 49, and Joseph laid up corn as the sand of the sea, very much until the left of numbering. There was so much there. Now, there was a 20% that put aside was so much, because there was great abundance, for it was without number. And unto Joseph were born two sons before the year of the famine came, whom Osnat, the daughter of Potipherah, priest of On, bore unto him. And Joseph called the names of the firstborn Menasseh, and it comes from the word to forget. For God has made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. And the name of the second called Ephraim, or Ephraim. And Ephraim means fruitful. For God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. And the 7 years of plenty that was in the land of Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began to come. So all this time, Joseph is still by himself, and no signs from his brothers. Anyway, we're going to stop at this point and continue next time. This is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people.